I'm Christopher Light, and this is The Connection. Some people are born deaf. Some people have deafness thrust upon them. Most of us haven't a clue about the world they live in. We're going to hear this hour that it is not the sensory desert we might have imagined if we had thought about it at all. Hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of Americans, depending on where you put the threshold, are deaf. Most of us are so audio-centric that our only deaf celebrity is Beethoven, who wrote immortal sounds that he never heard performed. In our world today, though, in fact, there is a colorful, lively, deaf culture of poets, actors, and dancers. One of the world's best-known percussionists, Evelyn Glennie, has been deaf since childhood. Science's growing ability to combat deafness has the deaf community wondering where the next generation will come from and what sort of sign language will serve them. We're talking about deaf culture this hour on The Connection, and we're getting an introduction to the psychology, the science, the politics of deafness, as well as to the arts that flourish in silence. Our guest this hour is Dr. I. King Jordan. He's the president of Gallaudet University in Washington, D.C., the Harvard, Yale, and Princeton of the deaf. He joins us in the studio with interpreters Maureen Boudreau and Yolanda Gillis. Connection listeners, make the deaf connection at 1-800-423-8255. Do you remember the Deaf President Now fight at Gallaudet? And are you acquainted with the world of the deaf? Do you know how to address it? 1-800-423-8255. The Deaf Connection with I. King Jordan from Gallaudet. Dr. Jordan, welcome, and thank you for joining us. This is new territory for us and for me. I'm fascinated watching your signing interpreter tell you what I'm saying. Maybe we could just begin by asking you to tell your story. How did King Jordan get to be President Jordan?
I probably should begin by talking first about my deafness. I think it's important to make sure you and the listeners understand that I became deaf as an adult. I became deaf after a motorcycle accident when I was 21 years old, and that's why I speak well. Sometimes when I meet parents of young deaf children and they hear me speak, then they think, well, gee, maybe my kids will grow up to speak like that. And that's probably not a good aspiration for a young deaf child. So please understand that I speak well only by accident. You know, I was born hearing, so I learned to speak like you did. I became president after a student-led revolution at Gallaudet University. The president resigned, the board sought to replace the president, and from the very start, the deaf community was very involved in insisting that it was time to have a deaf president. When the board appointed a hearing person instead, the students shut down the campus. And that was in March of 1988. We call that DPN, that's short for Deaf President Now. And that week was the week the world heard Gallaudet, and the week the world heard deaf people. An interesting and ironic expression, it's when deaf people found their voice, so to speak. And I think basically changed the attitudes of people inside the deaf community, because there was no longer willingness for us to accept the artificial limitations that hearing people had imposed upon us. Now we know we can do anything that people who can hear can. So
I've heard that you say that deaf people can do anything anybody else can do except hear.
Right.
And so what?
Yeah, that's exactly what I try to tell people.
But what does that mean?
Well, I'll tell you where that saying came from. When I first became president, I had a press conference on the very first day of my presidency. And the whole press conference was friendly and positive, and the reporters were all asking me nice, friendly questions about where we were going now that the protest was over. And then the very last question was from an individual who said, well, I hear what you're saying, but gee, you know, a college education for deaf people, what can deaf people do? What kind of jobs can they hold? And I took real offense at the question. I said, that's a silly question. Deaf people can do anything. And they can do anything hearing people can except hear. So there are deaf lawyers, deaf doctors, deaf dentists, deaf business people, deaf pilots, deaf race car drivers, deaf custodians, deaf lawn maintenance people, deaf nurses. The only thing deafness limits is your ability to hear and speak.
There's a deaf pride movement and consciousness associated, especially with that Deaf President Now breakthrough moment. What's it all about? Or to put it another way, I know you and others don't like to be called hearing impaired. Unfold the significance of that objection. Why not say hearing impaired?
It's just the word impaired. If you say hearing impaired, then there's something wrong with me. My hearing doesn't function. You know, that's too bad. My hearing doesn't function, but I'm not an impaired individual. I'm a very able person. I'm highly educated. I'm a good president. I'm a marathon runner. I'm a father. I'm a grandfather. I don't want to be characterized as impaired, and I know that other deaf people don't want to be characterized as impaired. I want you to focus on what I can do, not what I can't do.
What is that world of soundlessness that we ought to know more about? Take us into it.
The focus is wrong here. The focus is wrong because you, as a hearing person, when you think about deafness, all you can do is think about, gee, if I was deaf, I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that. So you think, I can't listen to the radio, I can't listen to music, I can't talk on the telephone, I can't. Instead, I think about all of the things I can do. Most of us are very visually oriented anyway, and the world is a very visual place. So for deaf people, our communication is also visual. And I think the world is a very, very rich place. And I really don't stop and think about what I can't do. I can't make this connection with people who can hear. You know, I want you to stop thinking about hearing and the loss of hearing and think about vision and how beautiful the world is and how beautiful the visual gestural language of the deaf community is.
Oh, that's fair enough. Don't hesitate to step on my bad habits here. I also just want to say it's utterly fascinating to see Yolanta and the subtlety of the things she's doing with her hands at the same time I'm speaking, and you're getting it milliseconds after I speak it. Introduce us to the subtleties of this language. We see it sometimes, you know, in the little corner of the TV set or sometimes at the front of the church where people are speaking or convention halls. How much can she tell you? Is there anything she can't tell you with hand gestures, eyebrow gestures, sometimes by moving her mouth too? Is there anything she cannot tell you that a hearing person would hear?
I don't think so. She, with facial expression and movement and the different intensity of the signs that she uses, communicates to me all of the inflection, intonation, all of the tenor of your speech. I think she does an outstanding job. So there's really no difference in what I'm, quote, hearing from you than what a person on the radio or listening to the radio would hear.
Does she tell you my tone of voice? Does she tell you I'm talking loud, soft, humbly, yes, arrogantly, or...
Yes, she's doing that right now. As you're modulating your voice differently, and as you're doing this, she's doing, I think, a very good job of that. Yes,
well, she is speaking to you in so-called ASL, American Sign Language.
Right.
Introduce us to that argument around different kinds of signing, and different schools of signing.
Okay.
American Sign Language as opposed to signed English, for example.
Okay. There's really only one language, American Sign Language, is the language of the deaf community, and there's a great deal of scientific research that shows that it is a full and complete language. When you talk about signed English and CSEE and other sign systems, what they do really is just put English into a visual form. When you talk about American Sign Language, there are different registers of sign language. Some are more like English, some are very different from English. But that's true about spoken language. You know, you use a different language at home with your wife than you use when you're talking to a bank official asking for a loan, than when you're talking to somebody who's run into your car, or when you're scolding a child. You know, there are different registers of spoken language. So there's a very formal sign language on the stage. There's sign poetry. There's music. You talked about church. There was a really interesting experience I had just a couple of weeks ago in an African-American church. There was, say, a choir, and there were three different interpreters. And with the harmonizing that was going on in the choir, the interpreters were signing different parts of the hymn at the same time. And it was the first time I've ever seen, you know, that kind of harmonizing visually. It was a really beautiful thing to watch.
Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. This is the Deaf Connection with Dr. King Jordan, who is the president of Gallaudet University. He's the president they found when students insisted that the president of their college, it is the famous university for the deaf in this country, they insisted it be led by a deaf person. And the world of the deaf has never been quite the same. Give them a call at 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. What are the principal obstacles? Well, I want you to be merciless about the myths that those of us with hearing have about the deaf, but I'd also like you to introduce us to the educational issues around the deaf in the world today. I also want you to be quite upfront about the point that you don't, the point of educating the deaf is not to get them out of the world of the deaf, but perhaps to lead them deeper into the deaf world. Those are three questions. Take them as you like.
Okay. Let me start with myths for a minute. One of the things that I object to is that people often equate how well a person speaks with how well a person thinks. And this is especially difficult for me because as a late deafened person, I speak fairly well. So people will meet me and think, oh, he speaks well, therefore he must be intelligent. And then they'll meet a colleague who's probably much smarter than I am who doesn't speak, or who, if she or he tries to speak, speaks unintelligibly. Then the people's first impression is based on what it sounds like, and they think, must not be a very bright individual. So I really want, if I can achieve one thing on the show, it's to disabuse people of the notion that how well you speak equates with how well you think. What you say is much more important than how you say it. Want me to just talk about education as well?
Yeah, please.
Okay. In the education of deaf people, there's a long history of controversy about whether or not sign language should even be used. There's the oral method and the signing method. And people who adhere to the oral method have a very strong belief that if you sign, then you'll impair the ability to learn to speak and lip read. And I don't believe that's true. I believe that if you sign to very young children, then you expose them to language, you expose them to information about the world. If you can introduce American Sign Language first, then use teaching as a second language approaches to teach English, then you'll achieve much better results. Gallaudet was established in 1864. We're 135 years old. For 135 years, we've used sign language, and we've achieved remarkable things. We've got professionals who have graduated from Gallaudet in every profession in countries all over the world, and all the leadership positions in the deaf community. No, I say all. The large, large majority of people who are leaders in the deaf community are Gallaudet graduates. So there's a big push and recognition now, I believe, to begin using sign language as early as possible.
Gallaudet, of course, is at the very, you know, high end of professional education. What are the main obstacles, and what lessons do you want to sort of preach to the parents of newborn and young deaf children?
The main obstacle is literacy. That's not just a deaf thing either. I think the main obstacle for the American population these days seems to be literacy. People need to work harder on reading and writing skills. I talk about technology and the wonderfully positive effect technology has had, and how computers, for example, the internet, the World Wide Web, really open up the world to deaf people. Because if you sit at a computer and you're keyboarding or reading a screen, hearing doesn't matter at all. But to have access to that, you have to be able to read and write well. So literacy is very important. When I visit schools and I talk to young children, I always play a game with them. I ask them, you know, what do you think the three most important things in school are? And they'll say, well, sports or recess or lunch or math or whatever. And finally, somebody will say reading. I say, right, that's the first. What's the second? And they'll give me other suggestions. And I say, no, the second's reading. And then I say, what's the third? Everybody knows the third. Oh, reading. So I say in school, really, reading, reading, reading. That's the biggest obstacle and the biggest goal for deaf education.
Interesting. This is the Deaf Connection with the president of Gallaudet University in Washington, D.C., himself deaf since he was 21 years old as a result of a motorcycle accident, King Jordan. Give him a call at 1-800-423-8255, or 1-800-423-TALK. Alex is on the line.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome, Alex.
I enjoy your show. I have a two-part question. I'd like to ask the president if there are positive virtues of being deprived of a sense. In other words, strictly a blessing. Is there a blessing in being deaf? In other words, can't obstacles sharpen a part of us? And then I'll ask my second part after I have that.
Okay.
Answer.
Is there a blessing in being deprived of a sense?
If I were to make a long list of all the changes in my life since I became deaf, and then group them into positive changes and negative changes, I can promise you that the positive part of that list would be much longer than the negative part of the list. I have a wonderful life right now as a deaf person. Is that a blessing in some regards? There are people who actually do research on compensation to see if you lose one sense, are the other senses enhanced? And there is some evidence that that might be true to some extent, that you don't see better. Well, excuse me, your vision's not better, but you see better because you pay more attention. You look better. And, for example, deaf people are very good drivers because driving is a very visual thing. And listening doesn't help you when you're driving. Think about hearing horns or hearing sirens. If you hear a siren, you can't really locate it in your car. You have to locate it visually. When you're a deaf person, you're always looking visual. So I think my seeing has been enhanced, even though my vision hasn't.
Alex?
I was going to mention that I was a Trappist monk for a short time, and I thought the talking became almost completely irrelevant factor in daily life, astonishingly irrelevant. And I wonder if he'd agree with that. That's the second part of my first question.
Yeah, actually I do. All of my friends are either deaf or can sign. And often when we're out together in groups, the communication will be silent and very private. And it's kind of precious, you know. We're in the middle of a big crowd, and there's a lot of noise, and there's a lot of excitement, and we have this little private world that we share. Mm-hmm. And people who see it, you know, they really don't know which one of them is deaf and what's going on over in that corner. So it's kind of nice.
Let them figure it out. Alex, I wonder if you also were driving at some sort of philosophical understanding or wisdom that comes of not being able to use all senses.
Well, I mean, my point really was that we assume that five senses are necessary to go through life. And I know it sounds cavalier of me, since I have all my senses, to say or to speculate whether not having one makes the one you're deprived of entirely possible to live a very healthy, wide, and uncomplicated life. Anyway,
it's really interesting that I'm not the best example to use here, because I grew up hearing in a hearing family, and then joined the deaf community late in life. Well, 21 is not really late in life, but joined the deaf community as an adult. But there are families where generations of people are deaf. So I have a very good friend at Gallaudet University who himself is third generation deaf, whose daughter also works at Gallaudet University, who has a deaf son. And to watch the families, the extended families, communicate and share their culture and their history, it's really a beautiful thing.
Alex, thank you. I'm glad you gave up your...
I have a second part of my question.
Can I thank you for giving up your promise of silence first?
Can I ask? Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, this is kind of related to the first part, but I was wondering, I'd like to know if is or isn't it an important quality of being deprived of a sense to overcome being touchy? I noticed, for instance, that when you're talking to so-called impaired people, and I know that phrase is offensive, but just using it, people always seem to be touchy that non-deaf people make mistakes. And I think, in other words, I'm saying, isn't the first sign of rehabilitation and overcoming a sense to not be touchy about it? I noticed already in this show that the president has made particular caveats or has seemed nettled about several particular things. And isn't a spiritual step forward to overcome that touchiness?
I don't know if I'm touchy. If I have communicated that, I apologize for it. What I would say is I'm frank. What I tell people is, you know, I'm deaf, so what? I'm deaf. I can't hear you. You know, one person actually asked me recently, are you able to travel alone? I said, excuse me? He said, well, what do you do when you go to an airport? Or what do you do when you go to a hotel? How do you communicate with people? And honestly, I'm a very poor lip reader. So I sometimes struggle to communicate with people. And sometimes I end up having to write things back and forth to people. But I manage. I flew all the way up here by myself this morning. So I really didn't mean to suggest that I was touchy about it. I just wanted to be sure that people understand that I and many other deaf people would much prefer you to think of us as normal individuals who can't hear than as a sad group of people who are without their hearing who need to be pitied. That's all.
Fair enough. Alex, last word?
No, I didn't think that you were rude at all, but my point is when you said, excuse me, just then, doesn't that get in your way that you have to say something like that? Shouldn't you get to the state where you expect people's stupidity to be part of life and that you're not hobbled by that?
Okay. Yeah, I'm certainly not. And people are ignorant, and it's not a negative thing. People don't know about deafness. People don't understand deafness. So I'm standing in line, and someone behind me says, excuse me, because he wants to get around me, and I don't move, and then the person thinks I'm rude. I'll say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm deaf. Then the person's very embarrassed because he thought I was rude. And all these little things, I hope, are positive lessons. I'm actually really a charming guy. I'm never rude out there. I'm nice to people all the time.
You're nice to us. 1-800-423-8255 makes the deaf connection. Thank you, Alex. Heather is on the line.
Yes, hi.
Welcome, Heather.
Thank you. I'm calling from Amstel, Massachusetts. I'm a speech-language pathologist, and I believe very strongly in signing with young children who are deaf. But my question was actually regarding the use of cochlear implants and what your thoughts were regarding cochlear implants in young children as well as in adults.
Interesting question. Explain, maybe Heather, you would explain just what cochlear implants are.
Well, cochlear implants are devices that may be implanted within the cochlea, within the ear, that for some individuals have been shown to be quite successful. It doesn't restore sound, but what it does do is it sends impulses to the brain so that one may perceive, so that they may perceive sound.
Fair enough. How do we feel about it? King Jordan?
The issue of cochlear implants, you're probably aware, is a very controversial one in the deaf community, especially regarding implanting young children. And there are very strong positions on both sides of the argument. As a university president, what I try to do is encourage debate and encourage research so that people will find out what are the benefits? Does it really help deaf children instead of arguing from an emotional or a cultural point of view? I would rather have research and data to look at it. Mm-hmm. To that end, we're going to establish next fall a cochlear implant center at Gallaudet. And we already have a number of children, both in the elementary school and high school and at the university level, who have and use cochlear mm-hmm. implants. I think one of the misunderstandings is that if you're implanted, you said correctly that it doesn't restore hearing, but there are a lot of people who think, gee, if I get an implant, then I'll be a hearing person, and you won't be. An implant is just like a sophisticated hearing aid. The hearing aid is very widely accepted in the deaf community. I'm sure that in the very near future, the cochlear implant is going to have to be very widely accepted in the deaf community.
Hmm. But is it it's the false hope, the exaggerated hope, that you want to warn folk against?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough. We're talking about the world of the deaf with the president of Gallaudet University in Washington, as we say, the Harvard, Yale, and Princeton of deaf education. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. We'll talk about the arts of the deaf after we come back from a short break. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI Public Radio International. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
From Boston University.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the Deaf Connection. With a little late Beethoven to get us started and in the mood, we're talking about the world of the deaf with the president of Gallaudet University in Washington, D.C., Dr. I. King Jordan. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255. Part of the mission is to dispel the myths about deafness that a lot of us in the hearing world have. Don't be shy about it. Brush us back. 1-800-423-8255. Stephen Sachs joins us by phone from Los Angeles. He's the artistic director at the Fountain Theater, where he holds workshops with deaf and hearing students. He's produced a series of poetry performances in English and also in sign language. Stephen Sachs, take us into your workshop. What's happening?
Well, what we did was we got a group of hearing students out in Santa Monica, California, and a group of deaf students in Burbank, about 20 miles apart, and we brought teachers into these classrooms in the public school district, and we worked with the hearing kids and taught them poetry in written form with the idea of them ultimately performing it on stage. And we worked with the deaf kids and taught them sign language poetry, ASL poetry. Mm. And the purpose of the workshop was to see, and then we brought both of these groups together. The idea was to look and see how hearing kids, hearing young people and deaf young people are the same and how they're different and how they sort of view the world around them, how they express themselves creatively in similar fashion and how each of the groups are unique. And we were also really interested in trying to dissolve prejudice and fear and stereotype that we thought that each group may feel about the other.
You stretch everybody's notion of just what language is. We were talking earlier, King Jordan was saying that there's practically nothing in terms of intonation, mood, gesture, in the things I'm saying, for example, that can't be translated into American Sign Language. I wonder, in poetry, you're talking about rhyme and rhythm and internal rhymes and length of lines and all kinds of associations with words that the history of words in a poetic line. What are the things you can and cannot do in the poetry of sign language?
Well, I find ASL poetry, when it's performed on stage, to be incredibly powerful and dynamic and theatrical. It's the equivalent maybe might be reading a poem by Rilke or Wordsworth versus haiku. It's visual. It cuts right to the heart of emotion and feeling. It's dynamic, and I find it to be incredibly moving and beautiful. Mm. When I was working with the two groups of kids, the kind of poetry that the hearing kids were writing were lovely and beautiful, poetic, incorporating a lot of words and language, and it was more florid. And the deaf kids, the words were, it was short, crisp, imagistic. It would sound like the sun sets, a bird flies, a tear runs down my cheek, a day begins. That kind of thing, and it's just beautiful. It's lovely.
Wow, we always say we believe in better pictures on the radio, better poetry that you can't hear exactly. Are there other examples?
I found that the interesting part of our program was when we asked both groups individually to write on similar subjects. We asked the hearing kids to imagine what it might be to be deaf and to write poems about that, or to imagine the world of that the deaf may inhabit, and we asked the deaf kids to do the same. And we brought the two groups together and shared the work over a weekend of workshops. And what we learned going in first, that there were some prejudices, some preconceptions, I think based on fear, because most of these hearing kids had probably never even met a deaf person before. So they were, like what Dr. Jordan was saying earlier, I think a lot of the hearing kids were stressing the limitations of not being able to hear. Mm. The word "can't" appeared a lot in a lot of their poems. I can't hear the Beastie Boys. I can't speak on the phone. Whatever. And the deaf kids were stressing, "I can do anything. I am no different," mm. Which was very instructional to the hearing kids. And by the end of the weekend, if you couldn't tell a deaf child from a hearing child, which was ultimately the whole point of the workshop.
Stephen Sacks, you wrote a play called Sweet Nothing in My Ear after interviewing deaf people about this whole cochlear implant controversy. What did you learn?
I learned a tremendous amount. One of the things I learned, which I wanted to strongly convey in the play, was in speaking to many deaf people, is that if they were given the opportunity to regain their hearing, if they were able to take a magic pill and suddenly become a hearing person, many, many deaf people would turn that pill down, would say no. Hmm. I'm fine the way I am. I'm happy the way I am. Hmm. There's a speech in my play where a character describes this and describes it as being the equivalent of if you were to go to an African-American and say, here, you take this magic pill and suddenly you'll be white and all the doors in the world will be opened up to you. Would he take that pill? Of course not. You know, he would say, I have my, I'm fine the way I am. I have my culture. I have my people. You know, and that was a big eye-opener for me. So my goal, one of the goals of the play was to try to open a door into the deaf world a little bit, as much as I can as a hearing person, and to show that, to get them to understand why many people in the deaf community view the cochlear implant as a threat on their culture and an attempt probably by a majority to make a minority be more like them, as opposed to allowing the minority to revel in its culture.
Steve Sacks, King Jordan has taken all of this in, hasn't missed a syllable. Do you want to comment, King Jordan?
Yeah, I do want to comment on that because it's very, very common in the deaf community to not want to become a hearing person, and it's very difficult for people who can hear to understand that. I try to explain to people that while I honestly know and understand that there are physical limitations to me because I can't hear, I've just reached a point in my life where I'm now so well adjusted as a deaf person that I would have no desire at all.
You wouldn't take the pill.
No, I wouldn't take the pill. No, in 1989, I had the pleasure of being interviewed on 60 Minutes, and I was asked that question on TV, and I actually used the same answer. I said, would you ask an African-American if he or she would take a pill to become white? And after I responded like that, the feedback that I got from deaf people, I don't think I ever said anything that deaf people felt more strongly about.
I'm sure some people disagreed. I mean, there are men who would take a pill to become women, or women to become men, or whites to become black, or black to be white. I mean, it's nice to have your identity, but some people...
Sure, there are people who would disagree, and that's another thing that's important. Another myth is that deaf people are all alike, and there's a great deal of diversity in the deaf community. So, I mean, diversity in every way. Some people who are deaf are so profoundly deaf that they hear no sound at all. Some people who are called deaf and call themselves deaf, really more like hard of hearing. They can use a telephone, can hear a radio, but they're real functioning members of the deaf community. And then we have everybody in between. So there are probably people in the deaf community who would take the pill. There are many people who wouldn't.
Hmm. Steve Sachs, I wish you'd stand by. This is very interesting. For a caller or two,
sure.
Our phone is 1-800-423-8255 with King Jordan, the president of Gallaudet University in Washington, and with Stephen Sachs, the artistic director of the Fountain Theater in Los Angeles. 1-800-423-TALK, the deaf connection. Sanjay is on the line. Hello, Sanjay.
Hello, good morning.
And welcome to you.
Thank you. My name is Sanjay Gulati, and I'm a child psychiatrist. I work around Boston full-time with deafness. I also, like King Jordan, am late deafened, having lost my hearing slowly during college and medical school. I wanted to comment about the experience that I work with daily of hearing parents who have a deaf child. I've noticed that the parents find this incredibly painful. They grieve for years. I have parents who, at the age when their child is 20, if you ask them what it was like when the child was first diagnosed, they'll still burst into tears. And that is in such dramatic contrast to the experience that you've been hearing so far about what it's like for deaf people. So in this sense, deaf culture is something so different from other types of culture, where in most cases, instead of being born into it, people discover it as a teenager or as a young adult, and then their parents might feel that they're losing them to another culture. I've come to believe, after working this for several years, that what happens is that people love their own culture and they love their own language, and that a hearing parent having a deaf child feels that they've lost that child. The child's not going to speak English or Shakespeare, or they're not going to speak Spanish. They're not going to know the things, the nursery rhymes, the things that the parent grew up with. And it's so hard for them to imagine that the child could connect as vividly and as beautifully with another culture. I have an interpreter here with me. I'm going to try and have her listen with me in case I can't hear what you're saying.
Yeah, stand by. I think King Jordan wants to respond.
Yeah, and I would like a comment on that as well.
This is something I encounter all the time when I meet parents of recently diagnosed deaf children. There always is a grieving period. And, of course, parents want their children to be as much like them as possible. So parents who can hear often have no experience with deafness, no knowledge at all about deafness. And then all of a sudden, boom, they're told that their child is deaf and will be deaf for the rest of his or her life. So it's really a tough period for people. There's no question about that. One of the things I always recommend to parents is that they try to meet deaf adults. They try to meet people who are deaf and who are successful and who are happy. And if they can meet deaf families where there are deaf parents with deaf children, then they'll see that... The families can be well-adjusted and happy in spite of the deafness. I met on the phone a mother of twins who are four, and one of the twins can hear and one of the twins can't. And that mother really had a beautiful attitude. She wanted very much to keep them together as they grew up and got educated. She was learning sign language. The hearing sibling was learning sign language. There are ways to address the grieving, but there is grieving, no question about it.
My experience...
Go for it, Steve Sachs.
Yes. My experience on this issue astonished me many times when we would take deaf actors, adults, into the schools, and we would work with a classroom of deaf children, and many of them had hearing parents, and their hearing parents never learned sign language. Even though their child now was 15, 16 years old, the hearing parents still did not sign. They did not speak the language of their own child out of a kind of denial, I think. And it would be like having a Spanish-speaking child and never learning Spanish. And they communicate in a kind of home sign or a pigeon sign, and it just adds, I think, to the marginalization of the child and effect on the child's self-esteem. And when we would bring in these deaf actors and work with these kids and show them sign language, ASL, and you see the eyes widen and their mouths kind of drop open, and there's a connection on a very deep level when we can show them and say, this is your language, this is what your language can do. Isn't it beautiful? And it's a remarkable...
We have a really neat program at Gallaudet. It's called the Shared Reading Program. And what it does is teach hearing parents how to read books to their deaf children. There's a lot of evidence that shows children who are read to when they're young become better readers as they grow up. Mm-hmm. And hearing parents really don't know how to read in American Sign Language. So we have tutors and videotapes and special books, and we teach hearing parents how to sit down with a book and tell the story in American Sign Language, and then over time shift it to the printed word and the written word. And it's really been a beautiful thing to see. The families become stronger. There's more of a bond between the parents and the child because the child sees that the parents are making a really sincere effort to learn their language. The story Steve told about how parents often don't know how to sign. Once I went to the wedding of a friend, and this friend's old enough to get married now. His mother came, and there had to be a sign language interpreter to go back and forth between the friend who was getting married and his mother. And it was one of the saddest things I ever saw.
1-800-423-8255 makes the deaf connection. Alice is on the line.
Hi.
Welcome, Alice.
First of all, I'd like to say I agree with everything that King Jordan has said about, you know, the richness of the deaf culture and the fact that any deaf person it can do anything anyone else can do except hear. And I also agree with, you know, saying to emphasize the things that you can do rather than the things that you can't do. But the fact still remains that you as a deaf person are missing something. And I think, you know, to say you wouldn't take the magic anti-deaf pill is sort of self-delusional rhetoric to just say, you know, I mean, well, I don't know. I mean, there is something missing, whether, you know, I don't know. And also the comparison of the Afro-American thing. I mean, the only reason an African-American is disadvantaged or missed something is because of social attitudes. And granted, I'm sure your difficulties are also compounded because of social attitudes, but they're not caused by them initially.
You're not deaf yourself, Alice.
I'm not. I'm actually blind. So, you know, it's somewhat similar, I guess. Similar but different.
Alice, I'm
and I'll
saying.
Tell you, I'd take the magic anti-blind pill any day of the week. Mm-hmm. I'd be first in line. And I live a very full, rich, interesting life. And yes, I also react by saying, what? When people say things to me like, oh, do you still go to the movies? I say, well, of course I do. You know, why shouldn't I? I'd miss everything if I didn't go at all, you know?
King Jordan?
Sure. I understand exactly what you're saying, Alice, and of course I understand that I'm missing something. I know that deafness means I can't hear. I know that I can't attend a concert and enjoy an orchestra. I realize that, but it took me years and years to adjust to my deafness, and I believe that I'm really completely and fully adjusted to it. I don't want to have to go through years and years to adjust back to become a hearing person. I became very active in the disability community after the Deaf President Now revolution at Gallaudet, and I was in different meetings with people with different disabilities, and you would probably be interested to know that there are many different views on this magic pill question. I have met and talked to blind people who wouldn't take the pill. So it's, I can't speak for all deaf people, of course, but, you know, honestly, I wouldn't take it. I'm not denying that I'm deaf. I'm not being,
Chris,
I just don't see a need right now for hearing.
Steve Sachs in Los Angeles at the Fountain Theater, thank you enormously.
Thank you.
For your work and for
pleasure.
Joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. 1-800-423-8255 makes the deaf connection. With King Jordan of Gallaudet University. Molly is on the line. She's the interpreter for Alexandra, who's a junior in high school. Molly and Alexandra, welcome. Hello, Molly.
Hi.
Welcome.
Alexandra just had a story to let you know.
Okay.
We would just like to say that people who hear do not need to fear controlling deaf people. Like most of the deaf people are not mentally handicapped. They're capable of anything hearing people can do, including communicating. So don't be afraid to try and communicate with deaf people. If all attempts at gesturing or speaking fail, use pen and paper. But there's no reason to think that it's impossible to communicate with deaf people. Just think in the same way as an English-speaking person trying to communicate with a French-speaking person.
Hmm.
It's just difficult, not impossible.
Molly, thank you, and thanks to Alexandra. We can all understand that.
Listen, Alexandra, you're a deaf junior in high school. I'm really happy to hear your story and very pleased with your attitude. That's very positive. Sometimes when I tell people I'm deaf, you know, their first words are, oh, I'm sorry. I said, you don't have to be sorry, you know. it's fine, I'm deaf. But there are people who are afraid to try and communicate with me. And
we don't say that to French people, do we? Oh, I'm French. I'm so sorry.
Right. So sometimes it's work. You have to work. But deaf people are really enthusiastic about hearing people who want to learn signs and very patient with the fumbling beginning signers. Hmm. So if anybody out there is interested in learning sign language, I really encourage you, please, you know, learn sign language and join our beautiful community.
1-800-423-TALK is our phone. Adeline is on the line.
I'm here.
Welcome.
And I'm loving this program because I've been married to a deaf person for close to 50 years.
Hmm.
And my husband became deaf as a consequence of meningitis when he was 2 years old. And I heard a lot of stories about what happened when this happened and his mother's reactions to it. He, by the way, was born in Poland and grew up in Poland, and English is his third language. He's also a PhD in physical chemistry, and he's still very much involved in his work, even though he's retired.
Adeline, we're running out of time. Have you got a question for King Jordan?
I don't have a question, but I remember when he was made president of Gallaudet, because we were living near Washington at the time, and it was a glorious thing to see those students stand on their feet and say, no, we want someone who is like us to be our president. And I'm just so absorbed in these different theater groups and things that help with the deaf people. And I tell people, carry a pad of paper and a pencil, and you can communicate.
Adeline, thank you. Thank you, King Jordan, enormously for joining us. Thanks to your interpreters, Maureen Boudreau and Yolanda Gillis. Thanks also to Stephen Sachs in Los Angeles. Connection listeners, you can continue the conversation on our website at theconnectiononeword.org. A transcript of the show will also be available on the website. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. From WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
From Boston University, this is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Open Market, hosting a career open house Tuesday, May 23rd from 4 to 7 p.m. in Burlington. Building e-business solutions for the new economy.